You probably heard the news this week about European countries checking papers at the border again, countries that essentially had open borders with each other for years. What changed? Refugees. And an effort to slow the tide of people fleeing war and repression in the Middle East. Our guest this hour was herself a refugee 70 years ago, fleeing post-Nazi Estonia as it was taken over by the Soviet Union in the waning days of World War II. Hillevi Roumet is an author. She wrote a memoir called Under Fate's Wing. She has explored the mind and spirit from a number of different angles. She has a PhD in clinical psychology and practiced as a therapist for many years, but she's also explored a number of other studies of Jungian psychology, Tibetan Buddhism, and mystical Christianity, among others. Hillevi Roumet, interesting life. Thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
My pleasure.
Is it fair to say that the kind of life you've led would have been impossible in the Soviet Union?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Do you have relatives back that you had a chance to compare notes with over the years or keep tabs on?
I'm in touch with some relatives, ones I didn't meet for 50 years because I couldn't go back. Half of them ended up in the Gulag, so... But the ones that did survive had a really hard time. Now, basically what happened to Estonia was in 1941, the Russians came in and just took over, and they deported thousands of people. And Stalin's criteria were if you were educated, if you had any assets, and if you were at all someone who was likely to speak out, you were simply eliminated. You know, Stalin's famous statement, no person, no problem. Mm-hmm. So these people were all carted to the Gulag. Most of them died there. They were essentially worked and starved to death. Some of them were shot.
People who would be logically likely to be a little more independent and free thinking. These are the ones
exactly.
That were pruned out.
Yeah, they took, actually in 1941, my father was taken, but he was on a ship that happened to be bombed and sank, and he managed to swim to an island nearby. The Finnish Gulf is full of little islands, and he hid out there, and then the Soviets came in, and they just sort of cleaned house in the form of people and everything else. And then the Nazis came in the next wave and took over. And so after the Soviets left and the Nazis came in, or the Germans came in, my father found his way back home. And then when the Soviets were coming back, we knew that it was the Gulag or leave.
So and oppression from the east followed by oppression
from the west. And then from oppression. So, you know, our ancestors who've been there for like 4,000 years that we know of, they were not smart. The Finns went across the Gulf where they were sort of out of the way. But Estonia has probably the best year-round port in Tallinn, and so very desirable for Russia. So, you know, Russians would come in, everybody would conquer us. It was a very peace-loving culture, and so everybody came. And then there was a period of freedom between the world wars, and then this happened.
I get the sense that Under Fate's Wing was supposed to be a private or family kind of project. Was that the way it was originally designed?
It started out as a legacy project because I have six grandchildren, two children, and I figured I would be gone by the time they were really interested. Mm-hmm. So I had promised that I would write the story. I really wanted my mother to write the story because she's the real heroine, and it just never happened. I even bought her a tape recorder, you know.
Really, huh?
Like, tape it. I'll transcribe. Just do it. But she lived to be 93, and she never did it. So I figured I better, because I'm the last one who can tell the story.
So what turned this into a bigger thing than just a legacy project to keep in the family and turned it into an actual published book? I mean, it looks like you decided to publish certainly before the mass movement of Syrian refugees.
Yeah, well, I was aiming that way then, yes. I did a little research. There's a really nice book called The Deep Peace in Europe after World War II.
Displaced Persons.
And when I read that, I was stunned at the magnitude of the problem. I never knew that there were almost 8 million people displaced at the end of the war. And most of them, when the war ended, went back, because a lot of people were displaced because they couldn't stay because of the war. Essentially, why the Syrians are leaving, you know. I mean, they don't want to come here necessarily. They just want to stay alive.
And to get away from what is threatening their lives. Sure.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's the only thing that would motivate someone, you know, who's perfectly fine and has a career and a house and a life, to leave all of that behind, which is what we did. You know, we went with nothing except a couple of suitcases. And when I learned that, and then I learned there were 1.8 million of us who were non-repatriable, who had no country to go back to. And I thought, you know, nobody knows about this. Even I don't know about this, and I was one of them. So I decided that this is probably something that needs to be written down and at least be on record as a piece of history that has not been looked at.
And that is the content of Under Fate's Wing. It's a refugee girl's flight to freedom in the shadows of World War II by subtitle. Hilary Rumet, you've been listening to, is the author of the book, and we'll come back and talk a whole lot more with her here on the Jefferson Exchange. Your questions and comments about the actions of the post-World War II Europe and what happened to displaced persons like Hilary and her family, including the 1.8 million non-repatriable. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Hilary Rumet and you in a minute 20. On the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about a refugee story, but not from the current day, but from 70 years ago in the closing days of World War II when Hilary Rumet's family had to get out of Estonia as the Nazis retreated and the Soviets advanced and her family did not wish to be sent to a gulag. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Under Fate's Wing and refugee crises now and then. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Hilary, you place some blame in your preface for the refugee situation, or at least the misunderstanding of it, on war coverage by the media. What do you find lacking there?
Tends to focus on either the war, you know, the bloodshed, the fighters, or the other extreme, the people who were, you know, exterminated. But there is very little about the people who were invisible, who lost everything, who had nowhere to go, and also, you know, thousands and thousands of traumatized children. And I think we're in danger of that happening again, because we see the dead bodies, you know, the people who drowned, but we don't see what happens when they actually get to a place where they're quote unquote safe, and then have nowhere to live, no food, no jobs, and really nobody who pays much attention to them, except in a very cursory kind of way. And so I wanted to bring this book out just as a record of one instance of over a million people and probably about 500,000 to 700,000 children who, like me, were affected for life by this. Now, in my case, mine is an incredibly positive, lucky outcome. I mean, the way we got through there is absolutely miraculous. That's why I call it Under Fate's Wing, because somehow or other, my mother elicited help from totally unexpected, unlikely sources time and time again, where people did something very simple to them, but life-saving for us.
She had an amazing facility for doing what the situation demanded, and always knew just enough of whichever language it seemed like, particularly English, when dealing with American soldiers, to be able to get herself through. And with you and an infant child. I mean, the fact is, it was after you left Estonia that your sister was born, right?
My mother was 9 months pregnant when we left, and we didn't plan to go to Germany. That was not on our screen at the time. We were going to Sweden. But the boat that we were supposed to go on, which was the last boat to go to Sweden, left early because the Russians were coming in. We just barely slipped under the Iron Curtain as it descended. We left the night before Tallinn was taken, and then for 50 years, Estonia disappeared off the map. And so we ended up on this German boat that they were taking. It was not a military boat so much as it was a hospital boat. They were taking their wounded and other people, and also some conscripted workers they wanted to use in Germany. And we wandered onto that boat thinking it was the boat to Sweden, and it turned out not to be. And then our choice was, do we stay on the boat and go to Germany and take our chances? And my parents thought, well, if we can get there, maybe we can go to Switzerland and ask for asylum. We didn't know that Switzerland had closed its borders, and that was not even a possibility. And also, my mother was 9 months pregnant, and we figured she could give birth any minute. And so at least there were some medical personnel on that boat. So that's how we ended up in Germany.
You mentioned the fact that the story, your family story, was miraculous. Ultimately, I mean, the fact that you all survived and made it to America, but it was not by any stretch an instantaneous thing, which is why the book is as big as it is. Was it 5-6 years between the time you left Tallinn and got to America?
It was about 5 years.
Mm-hmm. It's a long time. We're talking about the book Under Fate's Wing, which is a memoir of escaping Estonia in the waning days of World War II by Hillevi Rumet. She's our guest on The Exchange. You can join in 800-838-3760 and emails jx@jeffnet.org. Let me ask Hillevi to grab a pair of headphones and put them on because we have a phone call for her from Phil in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Hillevi Rumet. Phil, go ahead. Okay, I'm going to put Phil on hold because he's listening to us over the radio, which puts him 10 seconds late. So if Emily can get him back on the phone and warn him that that's not the way things work here on the radio, that we can get him back on the line. Okay. So for people not familiar with Estonia, and I'm sure there are quite a few, can you give us a picture of what it was like from your childhood?
Well, I was born into an ideal situation. My father had worked his way from being a village schoolmaster's son to being the head of the Tallinn Technical Institute, which was basically focused on engineering. And we had a nice house. We had a nice big garden. I had everything a child would want. They waited quite a few years to have me. My mother traveled around a lot because my mother came from a shipping family, and so there were ships she could go and ride along on, and so she did that and then decided she was going to devote herself to being a mother, and she did, and so I was a little princess for a couple of years.
It sounds like a charmed sort of existence, but you know, obviously they're not going to tell a six-year-old that much. How much of an inkling did you have that things were grim or about to get so?
Well, yes. When I was 3 years old, my father disappeared for a while. That's when the Soviets had took him and about 1,000 or I don't know how many other men. Basically, he was being taken either to the Gulag or to be cannon fodder because they took men and put them on the line, and you either fought or you were shot in the back. And so I didn't know why he was gone. And also then when the Germans came in, they took my dog and said he was a German shepherd who used to pull my sled around the yard. Mm-hmm. And so they took my dog, and then my other little dog disappeared. And so I knew that some a bad thing called war was going on, and that these people were doing all kinds of awful things. And then I guess I must have been 3 years old because it was 1941. And my mother's sister and her family were taken to the Gulag in one of those boxcar convoys, and they disappeared. And so, yes, of course, there was a situation out there that I didn't understand, and I knew it was really bad. And then, of course, came the day when I was told that we were leaving, and I was very, very attached to my home.
I can imagine it would have been wrenching for anybody. So you get on this ship thinking you're going to Sweden. Instead, you're going to Germany. You know, your parents really have to do some amazing improvisation along the way. You end up coming into Danzig, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now to present-day Gdansk,
mm-hmm.
Which is part of Poland now. And then where from there? I mean, you pretty much had just the clothes on your back and not much more, I would think.
Well, it so happened that on that ship, well, I describe how this happened. It's also a serendipity. But there was a group on the ship of Estonians who were being conscripted to go and work at a factory in Germany. I mean, they had been working for this German factory in Estonia, and so they were all taken along. And the guy who was their boss, these were not military people, these were civilians. And so he let us come along, and he essentially turned us loose in Danzig. Said, okay. And then we had no papers. We had nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so the opportunity came. He said, well, you know, if you want to come with us, you can come with us. But it meant going to a work camp, which was not like a prison camp, but you were fenced in,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you had to go through a gate, and my father was not allowed to leave there at all. But he thought my father, because of his scientific training, would be useful. It was a factory that made radio parts. And so we ended up being taken to a work camp, which was in what is now Czechoslovakia. And it was called Marish Truba at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And on the road there, on the train, my mother went into labor. And some German women came on board and said, well, there was an organization actually in Germany for the care of women. And these two nurse-like people came on the train, saw my mother, and said, this woman has to go to the hospital. And so there was some sort of an argument between them and the officials. But apparently they had enough clout to take us off the train so that, and I was also very sick. I had about a fever of about 104 or so. So they took us off the train to a small village hospital. And so my sister was born there, but then they put us back on the train and we had to go to the work camp.
And this is late 1944 at this point, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We're talking to Hillevi Rumet about her memoir about escaping Estonia in the waning days of World War II called Under Fate's Wing. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Let's see if we get the phones working. Phil in Ashland, let's give it another try. You there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. What's up?
Well, my wife bought the book, and when she brought it home, I picked it up, and I couldn't put it down. Just listen. Two of you, anyone can tell, this is a real adventure story. It has its heroes, particularly her mother, as Hillevi mentioned, and her father. The ordeals that they went through are quite an adventure. And also her own education process, Hillevi's education, is something to read about. Well, anyway, I just want to say that I just really enjoyed that book, and I think it has the merits of becoming a movie. It's that good.
And is that so gripping, indeed. Thanks for the comments, Phil. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Phil.
So let's focus on your mother, because mm-hmm. how old was your sister when you set off on foot through Germany?
A baby.
Uh-huh.
An infant.
We're talking months, then.
Yeah.
Okay. In the spring of 1945, then,
That's right.
as Germany was essentially falling apart.
Yeah, well, through a ruse, we got permission to go and visit some fictitious relatives in near the Swiss border. But my father couldn't go. I mean, they kept him. But the director of that factory, he was actually probably a pretty good guy. My father said that he was no Nazi. Mm-hmm. And so he probably suspected something. But he said, well, you know, I am not told I have to prevent women and children from seeing their relatives. So he gave us a written permission because papers were checked everywhere. Unless you had something in writing, they were just going to take you away. So so we had papers to travel. And so my mother and the baby and my grandmother was with us too. And my grandmother was fluent in German, which was very helpful. So we just got on a train.
So that's amazing, though, to think about the fact that you got a woman with infant child in tow, 6-year-old child, and her mother. So four women, because your father stayed behind, as you pointed out. Now, was there any discussion of that? Was there any real choice there? I mean, your father had to stay behind, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, when he came to see us off, he had an armed guard with him.
Okay, and it's not like you can make plans about, let's get together in this place at this time, because at that time, everything was up in the air, wasn't it?
Everything was up in the air, and we had to leave because the Russian front was very close, like maybe 15 kilometers.
It sounded like as fast as you could move, it kept catching up behind you.
Exactly, exactly. So we essentially ended up for some months between advancing Russians, and we made it to the Americans. And then the United States decided to hand over East Germany to the Soviet Union. And then with the withdrawing Americans, we were between the advancing Russians and the retreating Americans on foot.
Right, trying to catch the Americans who were all on jeeps.
And at that point, we were 10 women and children because we joined forces with another family. So we were a group of 10. We had two grandmothers, 3 mothers and 5 children, of whom I was the oldest.
Wow.
And we were all on foot. Well, we started out on the train, but then we ended up on foot.
The tracks were bombed out ahead of you or something.
Yeah, the tracks were bombed out, yeah.
Let's take another call. We have Ralph in Mendocino on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Hilary Rumet, the author of Under Fate's Wing. Ralph, you there? Okay, Ralph? No, Ralph is not there. Okay. So you describe a meeting, which you would think would be a happy meeting. You're trying to catch up to the American soldiers. You do catch up to American soldiers, and your mother has a conversation with them. This is the conversation with Sarge in the book that anybody who reads this will immediately know what I'm talking about. Not a surprisingly happy discussion.
Well, they were given the job of repatriating all the displaced people they came across, And they were determined to take us back to Estonia, which would have meant the gulag and my father probably being shot. Because my father wasn't with us at the time. But, you know, we would not have been in... It would not have been a good picture.
Right.
Yeah, no... You know, my mother was... actually, after I wrote the book... I didn't realize before I wrote the book the series of miraculous events that happened that saved us. And what Phil was referring to was also when I came to the United States, you know, this bird followed me here. So my mother handed it over to me, and now I seem to have handed it over to a grandson. But
the bird under whose wing you were, your fate, yes.
And so, you know, I ended up with an incredible education and all free. We had no money for school or college or anything. But I ended up going to top schools. And, you know, I've been very, very blessed. And then I started asking myself, what was there about my mother that elicited this kind of, you know, some sort of intervention, you know? I don't know what to call it. You can call it. You can call them angels. You can call whatever. But, and then I realized that she had perfected the art of braving on. And I think it's an art for our time, because there are many other disasters people have to go through. And I realized that one of the qualities she had, and she was really the one who saved all 10 of us, you know, the other women, because they would get discouraged every time we hit a wall. It was, oh, this is hopeless, this is hopeless. And she'd say, get up and walk.
Mm-hmm.
And she had, there was absolutely no self-pity. She was very just present with what was. She looked reality in the face, you know, and she didn't waste time with what coulda, shoulda happened, or how horrible this was and how hopeless it was and what on earth are we trying to do. She just looked at the next thing that was possible. And so when we hit a wall, she just stopped. And if there was an opening, she saw it.
She found a way to get through, absolutely. The book is called Under Fate's Wing. Hillevi Roumet is the author and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk to her and take more of your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. Final segment on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Hillevi Roumet, who grew up in Estonia and had to leave suddenly when she was 6 years old in the waning days of World War II, as the Nazis retreated and the Soviets advanced, and the prospects of her family ending up in a gulag, or at least some members of the family ending up in a gulag, seemed large at the time. So they chose to set out west, and after a long and tortuous journey, ended up in the United States. The book she wrote about it is called Under Fate's Wing. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We haven't gotten into the specifics of this discussion with the person you just call Sarge in the book, but he essentially was saying, no, our instructions are anybody from Estonia, we have to put on transports to go back to Estonia.
Right, and I'd rather not say anything more because it would be a spoiler.
Right. Not a happy confrontation, though.
Not a happy confrontation.
But your mother ended up getting all of you through it, the 10 of you in that group.
Yeah.
Do you have something you can read from the book about the 10 of you on foot through Germany in the spring of 1945?
Yeah, this is just a flavor, and I'd like to read this because this probably could be written by any number of people today in Europe. The walking went on endlessly, grim, gritty, incessant walking, all day, every day, on slushy country roads and roads with traffic, across fields and through the woods. Put one foot in front of the other, ignore being tired because we can't stop no matter what, and don't complain that the younger children get to take turns riding on top of the luggage on the wagon. I was the big girl who had to keep up with the adults, even though my feet hurt, my shoes were falling apart, and I was often so tired I was afraid I would keel over onto the muddy road. Sometimes I felt like really doing that, just letting go and collapsing on the road. I wondered what it would be like to die right there. Would angels come and take me to wherever heaven was? I knew no one else could pick me up and carry me. The adults were not being cruel. I was too heavy for any of them to carry, even if they wanted to, and my weight would also make the wagon's load too heavy for them to pull. None of them was very strong. Despite these thoughts, I braved on like the trooper my father had asked me to be. I couldn't let him down, even though I was getting increasingly upset that he had sent us off into this horrible situation and wasn't there to protect us. Wasn't that what he was supposed to do? I thought fathers were all powerful and could do pretty much what they wanted, so I now questioned his statement that he couldn't come with us. If he really, really wanted to, he surely would have found a way. I missed him so much, but now I was angry too. And these mixed feelings confused me.
And they hung on until you were reunited with your father, which did happen later on.
Yeah.
Where did you sleep? What did you eat on this foot trek through Germany?
Well, we slept wherever we could, sometimes in bombed out buildings. After the war ended, there were places that they allowed refugees to sleep in. And the food was essentially what my grandmother could scrounge from German farmers.
But she apparently had was quite a wizard with making a meal out of practically nothing.
She was. I really wish I had known to ask, you know, what I want to encourage the audience is if you have grandparents who had an interesting life, please don't wait to ask them any question that comes to your mind, because I have no idea how she made, you know, once in a while we would get eggs. How did she cook them to make them edible? How did she keep my sister's diapers clean? Because we were all, you know, pretty presentable. And potatoes, which were a staple because the farmers had potatoes they would feed to their pigs, so they would give some to us. How did she cook potatoes? You can't eat raw potatoes. That is a total mystery, and I still wonder, and I think, you know, why didn't I ask her?
Well, this amazing things happen on this journey. Let's take another call and see if the phones work. John in Grants Pass, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Hillary Rumit, the author of Under Fate's Wing.
Hi. Well, first of all, I hope Josephine County Library has this book. I would love to read it. And I think if I look online, I don't have anywhere to write down the name of it. But here's my question. Did you witness much of the denazification right after the war? You know, I remember General Eisenhower said that we got to find a way to house and feed these people, much less identify the war criminals, take down all the swastikas, and all the rest of that stuff. And as you traveled through Europe, you must have, well, I want to know what you saw of that. Thanks.
I don't know. My only contact with Nazis at all, and it was not really in a major way, was when we were in the work camp and I had to go to a German school, but I didn't speak the language. I learned a little bit, but that was a civilian factory where we were put to work. So I don't know. At the end of the war, there were so many displaced people, and a lot of them were German. But the denazification, I don't know. I was far too young to know much about that anyway. And if my parents knew more, they didn't talk to me about things. You know, when we were in the DP camp, the adults managed to create sort of a virtual little normalcy bubble for the kids.
Mini Estonia, it sounds like.
Mini Estonia, yeah. We had our own schools. My father was one of the founders of that. We had an elementary school and a high school in Estonian with English as a second language so that we would learn it. And, you know, we created all kinds of activities. So I was really protected from a lot of the uglier things that went on in Germany after the war.
So from the time you set out on foot from it was Czechoslovakia, wasn't it? Or your train took you part of the way into Germany, I guess.
But I have no idea where, you know, we went, I know that we kept heading west, but I don't know exactly. I think one of the trains went through Prague, and I think it was Prague, and then it went back to Prague, and then tried another way and ended up on foot. And where we went on foot, I have no idea.
Where was the DP camp where you ended up?
Augsburg.
And so that was the American zone.
Was the American zone. We finally made it into the American zone under a rain of bullets.
Really? From whom?
Americans.
The Americans were firing bullets?
Yep. Okay. Well, they drew a border that nobody was to cross. And so there was the woods that were on the border. We crossed that border illegally. But what they did to prevent people from doing that, and they warned the DPs that you were risking your life if you went through those woods. But our life was at risk anyway. So what the heck, you know?
Right.
So they just fired at random into the woods, you know, in a horizontal trajectory, they weren't specifically firing at us, but they were just firing at random, and they were firing about 4 or 5 feet above the ground, and so we stayed close to the ground, and the baby carriage was fairly low, and so we managed to get through without anybody getting shot, in the morning, we didn't know whether we were in the American zone or not. But it turned out that we had managed to cross.
I can imagine discussions with your sister later in childhood, or and you got in your teen years, and you were telling her this, the circumstances around her in the first few months of her life, and her saying, "What?"
No, she was the one. She was the only one who had food, because my mother luckily had enough breast milk, so she was well fed. Because my mother's teeth later in life suffered from that, but.
Wow. So you get into the displaced persons camp. There's an oh my God moment when your mother just drops everything and runs because your father has arrived. So the whole family's back together again. But what did you know of what the plans were? Were there plans for what to do with you at that point?
No, there were no plans. Basically, the International Refugee Organization was just sort of set up the camps. And we got a care package each week. And my grandmother did wonderful things with spam.
Somebody has to. We mentioned she's a cooking wizard.
No, she was. She was amazing. And, so we essentially had subsistence. But then the camp became a very creative place. I think the part in the book where I describe the camp could serve as a resource for people who are creating refugee camps, because we had our own self-governance. We had our own schools. You know, we were provided some supplies, but we had very little. But we also had an incredible group of talented people. We had teachers, we had artists, we had... we had artists, engineers, actors, musicians, because the people who left, who were so desperate to leave, were the people who were going to be Stalin's target.
Right, the intellectual.
Just for being
types,
who we
yeah.
were. Mm-hmm. I mean, my father was not involved in politics. He was a physicist, you know, and my mother wasn't either. So. But we would have still been taken to the gulag. And so in the camp, it was incredibly creative. And for us children, you know, we didn't have toys or things. So we created some very interesting activities for ourselves, some of which were a little bit dangerous. But
it always sounds like there was always a game of I dare you going on, no matter
yeah.
where you were.
Yeah.
So what were the parts that had to finally fall in place for your family to be able to immigrate in the United States?
Well... the immigration was possible, or emigration to various countries, but we didn't qualify because one of the boundaries was age. If you turned 50, you were no longer desirable. None of the countries wanted people who were over 50 or handicapped in any way, and so those are the people who couldn't get permission to emigrate. The United States was actually the toughest to get into and the latest to start taking immigrants.
And so was it 1950 by the time you finally arrived here?
It was 1949.
49, okay.
Yeah, and the camps were going to be closed. They did finally close them, I think, in 1952 or 51, but they were closing the camps. And again, it was a miraculous intervention I don't want to talk about, but it's a really, really shows you that generational karma works.
How much do you remember of the ocean voyage and the arrival in New York?
I remember a lot. I remember the voyage seemed very long because I was used to ships, but they were short, mm-hmm. short
just around Europe,
sails.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. But day after day, and I never knew there was so much water anywhere. And in New York was almost overwhelming. It was like going up the Hudson River. We didn't have to go to Ellis Island because we had a sponsor who. And so we went right up the Hudson River to the docks on the west side. And these skyscrapers, it was like a forest of skyscrapers. And, it was open-mouthed. And when I first saw the Statue of Liberty, that was, I thought she was gorgeous.
No doubt. Where did you live at first?
The first place we lived was, somebody got my father a job as a building superintendent in the Bronx. So we lived in the Upper Bronx first, and then after about a year and a half, he got another job. He was totally unqualified to be a building superintendent.
Not handy with a wrench, huh?
No, his way of fixing things was to theoretically figure out how this should work and then try different approaches until something did. But
let me fast forward way yeah. forward. Since the Soviet Union collapsed, have you been back to Estonia?
Yes. Mm-hmm. A number of times.
Uh-huh. And how does it seem to you today? Is there anything from what you remember of your childhood there?
Well, my grandfather's farm, although the house is different. Little things, and of course Tallinn. You know, because my mother used to push my baby carriage near the old medieval walls, so mm-hmm. that felt very familiar, but it changed. I mean, I took my mother back for her 80th birthday, and she got to spend a night in the house in which she was born.
Wow, that is amazing. The book is just full of amazing things. It's called Under Fate's Wing. It's a memoir of Hillevi Rumet and her family getting out of Estonia in the waning days of World War II. She will be appearing at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland tonight at 7 p.m. if you'd like to see her in person.